Well, it was nostalgic driving in with my kids this morning. There we are. Some of you know this, some of you don't. I actually grew up here for the first 10 years of my life in Hudson. I spent my K through 6 years right out the back at the elementary school. And the house that I lived in first and second grade was just 3 doors down from this church. And so I was here for VBS and Wednesday nights and things like that. Even though my parents didn't go to church, this church was very instrumental in being a part of my life. And that was a very big thing. If you don't know me, my name is Caleb Phillips. I mentored and ministered to orphan and at-risk children in Chiang Mai, Thailand. And I empowered Thai adults to better understand and work with orphan and at-risk children. We have a clicker of sorts. Is that... Okay, that'd be great. Now, what you should know is that I've only done this presentation with youth and young adults. And so if it falls flat, just know that in a couple weeks it'll be really good and you were a part of that making it better. So just feel good about that, okay? So this is my family. That was our front yard in Chiang Mai. My wife, Christy, we just celebrated 9 years of marriage. We just went to our 10-year high school graduation a few weeks ago and won the award for those who have been married the longest. And my wife received a really long sword, apparently to keep me in check. We thought that was funny. Our son Luke is 3.5. He is getting really big and loving life. And then our daughter Addison just turned 1 on August 30th. She was born in Chiang Mai. She has red hair for some reason, unbeknownst to me. And she is up and walking and really loud and everything else. And so they're back in the kids section this morning, I think, making a lot of noise and really enjoying all the toys. That's a big thing at church. And so I just want to tell you a little about the work, tell you a lot of stories of how your support has just been changing lives in Northern Thailand. What I do is pretty simple. I do ABCD, if you can remember those letters. Asset-based community development. This is a picture of the Joplin tornado. If you didn't know, I went to Ozark Christian College right in Joplin. A few years later, it was hit by an F5 tornado, and a lot of what I knew, the apartment that my wife and I lived in for a few years, was gone. And we went down just a couple days after. I have a younger sister-in-law who still lives there now with her husband, and we went down to try to help things out and help people find their things and just sort of settle down right after the tornado. And, of course, what comes in after a big disaster like this is relief organizations come in and they give out food and water and they do relief, which is very good because people need relief. But then usually what happens is that people don't stay around for the development to help businesses get back on track, to help build homes, to help people sort of get their lives back in order. Relief is wonderful, but there's a point where you have to move people forward and get people going again. And so when we come into communities, a lot of the communities that I would work with, no clean water, no adequate food source, a lot of issues of dealing with mafia members and individuals who are not looking to help out their community. And instead of coming into a community and saying, what don't you have? Because we're all really good at that. Hey, what don't you have? What don't you have enough of? Well, I don't have enough money. My house could be a bit bigger. I really need a new truck. Instead of coming into a community and saying, what don't you have? We come into a community and say, what do you have? What do you have to help solve the issues that exist in your community? And a lot of times what I ask churches is, what do you have in order to complete the vision and mission that your church has set forward? I don't have my bulletin with me anymore. I don't know what the vision and mission of Hudson Christian Church is.
I'm not sure that we have it posted.
Okay. I'm guessing something to do with glorifying God in our community, reaching out to the lost, edifying the believer. But instead of coming into every community and saying, what do you not have? What do you need in order to fulfill this? We come into a community and say, what do you have? I really had the privilege a couple years before we left to go to Thailand to spend a lot of time at your church, going to Area Men's Fellowship, coming in on Sunday lunches and things like that. And I met a lot of wonderful ladies who could cook and who were great at looking after children. I met a lot of men who were really good with business, who were really good with their hands, who were really great friends, who were really great with agriculture. who are really great with music. And I said, wow, look at all the gifts and talents that this church possesses to meet the vision and mission that you guys have laid out before you. Instead of saying, we don't have anything, we could use a bigger building, we need more staff members, we need more XYZ, saying, we have everything we need to reach out to our community and the communities around us, to give money to missions, to do our part. You have all those things. And so that's what I'd encourage you with. So for the last year and a half, I've been working at the Agape Home for Children, the Agape Children's Home. It's a home housing 100, let's see, as of yesterday, it was 106 children who are living with HIV and AIDS or who are at risk due to HIV and AIDS. If you don't know a lot about HIV, HIV is a very highly infectious, very dangerous, deadly disease and virus that you get through your blood. And a lot of our kids have it because it's passed on from their mother to them when they're born. Their moms pass away because of the disease, and now they're living with it. And because of the way that systems are set up in the government and in Buddhism, the religion of Thailand, these children are not taken care of. And so the Christian community is the community that's looking after these children. Sometimes the children get adopted. There were 6 adoptions while I was there at the Agape Children's Home. Very beautiful, very wonderful. But a lot of the kids are not being adopted because it's difficult to try to convince an individual to not just adopt a child, but to adopt a child with HIV. And so we spend a lot of time helping the children to learn how to go from being a 10-year-old with no parents to how are you going to be 18, 19, 20 years old and go out into the world and live a good life, get a good job, and make a good family, have a good life. Those kinds of things. The things that we work on are the things that we do. So we have kids as young as 6 months old. The girl in the middle, Pinpina, she was. I'm not supposed to have favorites, but she was one of my favorites. She's a real sweetheart. So the last day that I was at Agape about a month and a half ago, one of the workers said, do you want to take her home? And I said, I don't think she can fit in my luggage. We're kind of full at the moment. She's a real sweet little girl. This is my buddy. This is my buddy Bax. We just found out that he got matched to be adopted to a family who lives somewhere in Alabama, some town I couldn't pronounce. And so that was really wonderful. We have children who are school-age children. This is Marie. Marie will be going to Nice, France here in another month or two. She's a very sweet girl. Speaks, of course, the language of Thailand, Central Thai, which is what I speak now. She speaks a dialect of Northern Thai, and we've also been trying to... We started trying to teach her English because we thought, well, she's probably going to end up in America, is what her profile said, but now she's ending up in France. We sort of shrugged our shoulders and were like, well, she's 6. She'll pick it up. So we have teenagers who come from all different ethnic backgrounds, all different walks of life, but have ended up at Agape as orphans, and it is a bond that sort of keeps them together. And then, of course, we have the wonderful thing of a lot of our children are being 18, 19, 20 years old, and they're completing their high school education. In Thailand, only about 8% of kids who graduate from high school go on to college. It's very much an agrarian society. And so a lot of our kids are graduating from high school and they're moving on to a good job. But completing that high school education is very important to help you move on. And so we make a big deal about high school graduation with our kids. I'd like to tell you about Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus is he's a young boy. He's 8 years old. He actually came from the country of Burma, just north of Thailand, with his mom. He and his mom are both HIV positive, and his dad died about 6 years ago because of HIV and AIDS-related illnesses. Zacchaeus and I spent a lot of time together. You see, I'm about 6'1", 200 pounds. I'm a big guy. Most people in Thailand, the average man is about 5'4". So the kid's name for me was the White Giant, which is really interesting. You don't get nicknames like that unless you're at an orphanage with a bunch of kids. And so Zacchaeus is 8, but he's about my son's size. He's the size of about a 3 or 4 year old boy in America because HIV has stunted his growth. Lives with his mom there at the Agape home, And we spent a lot of time just playing sports, working on his math homework, which I'm not great at, but I can do 8-year-old math. And he came home from school one day just in tears, a few bruises on his face, and we said, "What's wrong?" He said, the kids, they know that I have HIV. He broke out in lesions, and they knew he had HIV, and they didn't want him to be around him. In Thailand, most people don't really understand the disease HIV and its infectious nature. They think that you have HIV because you were a bad person, you did a really bad thing, and they don't want you around. And so they beat him up, said, "We don't want you around." We went and talked to his teacher. His teacher said, "It's none of my business. It's none of my problem. I don't even want him in my class." There's no word for compassion in the Thai language. Not like the compassion that we understand from God. And so what do you do with that in a system that's unfair, difficult? You can mentor, counsel, talk, and help a young 8-year-old boy to understand that maybe this is the way that life's going to be. And help him to understand that, but there's something beyond this. There's something better. There's a whole community of believers in this world who would do anything for you, who have done anything for me. And that's what I got to do every day. Help him to understand his status as a creation of God. And it was pretty incredible. My next kid is a boy named Dao. Dao just turned 14. I wasn't there, but I bought him a gift before I left. So I bought a 14-year-old boy. What would you buy a 14-year-old boy if he had a birthday? You buy him a shovel, right? Right, Donnie? That's what you see. See, Donnie gets a good laugh out of that. You buy him a shovel. Dao's really, really interested in agriculture, as most people are in northern Thailand. And he's a real smart boy. HIV, sometimes when children are born with HIV, you know it right away. They're born, they're very sick children, and it just takes a whole different effect on them. For Dao, it wasn't. His family didn't find out until he's about 6 or 7. When he was about 8 years old, his parents died of HIV and AIDS-related illnesses. They both had HIV. And then when Dao was about 10 or 11, he came to the Agape home because his family could no longer look after him and take care of him. But he had years and years and years of not getting proper nutrition or being looked after very well and not getting the kind of medication you need if you have HIV. And so his immune system was just gone. He's a 13-year-old boy who was chronically fatigued, exhausted all the time. How many 13-year-old boys you know are exhausted all the time? Run. And his HIV made it, he has a disorder, that's the English word, a disorder that doesn't allow his body to absorb nutrients and protein the way that a normal person's body does. And so I went with him to the doctor one day, and the doctor, we're speaking in Thai, he said, "Okay, so there are two things he needs to do. He needs to sleep more and eat more." And I said, "What 13-year-old boy in America would love for the doctor to look in his parents' eyes and say, sleep more, eat more?" But you couldn't slow him down. So we had a project where we planted 800 papaya trees. If you haven't had fresh papaya, I don't like it. My kids love it. And went out and planted papaya trees, and he led everybody in prayer. And that's him out working in the hot, hot sun, digging holes and planting trees. And we had to try to help Dao understand that his life is about managing his disease, his virus, but that he can still continue to have a very good life, even with it. It's really interesting working with kids who, or people for that matter, who have something in their life that they'll never get rid of. It will always hinder them. It will always be there. Their past will always stay with them. And having to help them manage that and not just be able to write a check or find a cure or go to a great doctor and it be gone, done, rid of. It's really interesting working in that kind of situation. God, why can't you just take it away? Helping them find the reality of their situation helping them live with that reality every day, but to find that there's a lot of joy and hope and peace that they can come to live with, and to understand that life isn't over. Life maybe is just beginning. This is Sangkum. He's on the right. He's a man that I got to, I would say young man, because everybody in Thailand looked very young. I started shaving at 12, and Sangkum had said, oh yeah, I shave like once every month. He's a 40-year-old man who shaves once a month, which is always really interesting to me. I didn't shave for a couple months, and I came in one day, and he just said, it's too weird. You look like an 80-year-old man. And he works at the Agape Home for Children, and he's a community developer. So at the Agape Home for Children, we have orphans. Mom and dad are both gone, and the children live with us. But there are a lot of children in our community in Chiang Mai. We have 2 million people. A lot of children who have HIV, mom and dad have passed away, but they live with a family member. They live with an aunt, an uncle, or they live with grandma and grandpa. And in a lot of cases for our kids, mom and dad passed away and grandma, grandpa, aunt, and uncle abandoned them. But now in this situation, mom and dad have died, aunt and uncle, grandma, grandpa are now taking care of them. And we really honor that. We honor families who are looking after their own family members. And so we at the Agape Home, we come alongside of those families and we pay school fees for 32 children. Here in the U.S., if you go to public school, it's virtually free. It really works not like that anywhere else in the world, especially in Asia. You choose a school that you want your kid to go to and you pay the fees, period. That's the way it is. There's no government subsidies or anything of that nature. And so kids go to school, it costs $1,000 a year. The parents make $1,000 a year in wages, and there's really nothing left over. And so we come alongside of the families to help pay school fees and to really honor that. And so we help send 32 children to school who have HIV. One of the homes, we started visiting them time and time again, Sangkum and I did, and it's a grandma and grandpa. They're in their early 60s, and their daughter and son-in-law died because of HIV. And grandma makes somtam, which is papaya salad, on the side of the road. And grandpa is a painter. Live in a very small home. It's, well, square footage-wise, it's maybe about half of this part of the sanctuary. Grandma, grandpa, and grandson, and they're doing their absolute best with him. And we would meet with them every couple weeks to be able to disperse funds for school, to get a receipt for the last month. And Sangkum is a pastor at heart, and so we had time to sit on the floor and just talk with them about where they were at in life, how they were doing. And Sangkum always found a way to share his own faith. I come from a non-Christian home, and so does Sangkum, like most Christians in northern Thailand. And he was able to talk to them about how he got past the religion of his parents and found Christ. Well, we decided that their home needed a little extra help. They're only in their early 60s. I'm not calling that old. Please don't take that against me. But they've been working 12-hour days, 6 days a week, their entire life. And some of you have seen people who have done that, and it wears you out. And so just keeping up their home and cleaning it and things like that became too much. So we came in, we had a group of volunteers from Houston, Texas, come in from a church, and we fixed a couple doors that were rotting out. We cleaned the whole house top to bottom. We helped Grandpa paint. We did a couple really nice things for them to kind of help deal with some of those issues. And the team from Houston brought a couple of teenagers as well. It was over the summer. Am I doing that?
Nope.
Okay. And we brought in a team, and they were really nice, and got the house cleaned and painted and got a lot of really nice things done. And they're saying, I mean, we're helping to fix a door. I got to show a picture of myself, or you wouldn't think that I was doing anything. Fixing some paint on the left and fixing some electrical wires and things like that. We sat down with this family that we cleaned the house, we paint, we change doors, all these kinds of things. The grandma was nice enough, she's a cook for a living, made us lunch every day, which was incredible. The first time we sit down in their living room with them, Sangkum had talked to them at least 50 times about his faith, the gospel, And we sit down, and the first thing they said was, okay, so I guess we're ready to hear about Christianity. And Sangkum said, okay, Caleb, take it away. And I said, okay, Sangkum, I'll do it. And so we spent an hour and a half, 2 hours talking about Christianity. And we didn't have to get into Trinitarian theology and the finer points of the faith. I just got to sit there and talk to them about, why did I become a Christian after living in a non-Christian home for so many years? How did I meet grace? How did I meet God? What are the things and the people who have been changing my life since then? And Sangkum then took it over and talked about his own faith. Trust me, you can talk about your faith in English a lot better than I can talk about mine in Thai. And at the very end, they said, okay, how do we sign up? That's sort of the Thai word of putting it. And Sangkum talked to them about getting baptized. Sangkum's lives in the same neighborhood. He has his own little church in that neighborhood. And that Sunday, they went to Sangkum's church and got baptized. And I said, that's how community development, that's how you get into people's lives. Missionaries have been in Thailand for over 100 years, setting up churches, preaching the gospel, and being very, very faithful. And for whatever reason, it's a country that Christianity's never really taken off. And in the last 10 to 15 years, things have sort of changed in strategy a little bit. People have gone in and started orphanages, or they've started agricultural projects, and they've just worked with people, lived alongside of people, done the things that you do every day. Go to work, teach, work on a computer, finish projects, and set an example for the people in your lives, for your coworkers, for the people around you, and just live a Christian life. And then your coworkers say, what's so different about you? And you say, well, let me tell you about my faith. It's the same, very similar setup that we use. And it really changed some lives. And it was very, very neat to be a part of that. Oh, there's me doing good deeds as well. There you go. I just had to make sure I get enough FaceTime. There you go. Okay. I want to tell you about a friend of mine named Nguyen. This is my last story. At Agape, we mostly house children, but we also have a hospice center for ladies who are dying of HIV and AIDS. After you are infected with HIV, your immune system breaks down and you develop AIDS, and then AIDS eventually kills you. Nguyen is a really good friend of mine. When I first got to Agape, she kind of became a kind of an aunt, kind of a mother figure. And we spent a lot of time talking about our faith together. Every Wednesday afternoon, we had kind of a tea time. I worked with Australians, which was crazy in and of itself. I not only had to work with Thai people who didn't understand English, I had to work with Australians who didn't understand English. There's a lot of interesting stories there. And we had a tea time every afternoon. One thing about Australia that I really enjoyed, a tea break every afternoon, with a nice cup of coffee and a nice cookie. And we sat down and we had tea time with Nguyen and the other ladies of this hospice center. And Nguyen, she grew up in northern Thailand. She was a road construction worker. She was married. And her husband got really sick one day, and she said, well, let's go to the hospital. If you have a Thai citizenship card, you can go to the hospital for free and get any kind of service you want done for free. So they walk into the hospital, and he gets his blood tested, and he's HIV positive. Nguyen says, I better get mine done too, and she's HIV positive. The only possible way for them to get HIV in their adulthood was for him to be unfaithful outside of his marriage, contract HIV from another person, bring it into his marriage, and get her HIV infected. They already had a daughter. She was 8, 9 years old. She's living now HIV negative, does not have HIV. Nguyen's husband died a couple years later. She got on medication and has fought the good fight for many years. She came to Agape, people shared their faith with her, and she became a Christian. And as women continued to come into the hospice center, very much a last place for people to come and die of HIV and AIDS, she very faithfully shared her faith with every single woman who came in that door. There were non-Christian volunteers that I work with, who didn't speak Thai, and I found myself preaching sermons, translating Nguyen's sermons to them about how they had to become Christians, about her faith and how she came to Christ. It was pretty extraordinary. She lost her fight against HIV and AIDS in June. And they said, well, Caleb, we want you to preach the funeral sermon. I said, well, I haven't preached a funeral sermon in a few years. And I said, but I think I can do that. And they said, well, our Thai pastoral staff is actually on vacation this week. Could you preach it in Thai? And I said, yeah, of course I can. And they'd said, well, and all the other volunteers who work at Agape, there's about a dozen of them, they don't speak Thai. And so, but we don't have anybody to translate. So could you preach it in Thai and then simultaneously translate it into English? And I had said, of course I can. No problem. This was at 8 p.m. I had to preach at 8 a.m. And so my wife very graciously helped me sort of make the bare bones of my sermon before she went to bed. And I stayed up and kind of winged it the next morning a little bit, but I did just fine. And the funniest part of that sermon was one of my Australian volunteers sort of gave a prayer at the very beginning, and they said, and he doesn't speak Thai, and they said, can you translate his prayer into Thai? And I said, one, prayers are very difficult language in Thai. I had just started learning how to pray in Thai. And I said, two, he's Australian. I barely understand what he's saying half the time anyway. And so they got me up there, and I did okay for a while. And I just thought, oh, okay, Peter, you just need to make this as short as you can. And we started off, and the first thing he said is, thank you, Father God. Okay, I know how to say that. And later on down the road, he had one point had said, we thank you so much for your grace. And I thought, okay, I know how to say this. But I used the wrong tones. Those of us who know tonal languages get in trouble with that. And I had actually said, thank you for the bull's ears we're going to eat for lunch later on. And then later on, we didn't have bull's ears. We didn't have ox ears for lunch. And one of the workers was really confused about it and brought it up to the person I translated the prayer for. And he said, what's he talking about? And I said, I have no idea. So I felt really bad lying to him. I said, I have no idea what he's talking about. I think he got really confused or something. At Nguyen's funeral, she had about 100 family members who are non-Christians who came. And they got to hear me talk about something. I did my best. And what was really neat was her daughter was there. And her daughter, who's 18 years old, said, my mom got HIV. Her parents, her siblings abandoned her and told me to abandon her. And you people took her in. You don't even know who she is. She's not your family. What responsibility is she to you? And I told stories about Nguyen, and she kind of realized that Nguyen and I were very close. And she said, I just want to know more about why you would do this for my mom. And so after the first week I got back, I got an email from Sangkum. And he had said he had been studying the Bible with Nguyen's daughter every week since Nguyen had passed away. And he said, this last Sunday, she came to church. She stood up at the end and said, I believe. And they took her down too. We don't really have baptismals in Thailand. They took her right down to a pond and baptized her. And I just said, every day you get opportunities to preach and you don't know what you're going to say or whether you're going to say something right. And somehow it ends up being okay. And every day you meet people like Nguyen who their life just seems to kind of transcend. And you meet a God who can take somebody's awful, horrible, diseased life and somehow make it grace for other people. That was her casket at her funeral. So everything we do in community development is about moving people to Christ. And I got to tell you a little bit about that. Right after I left the Agape home about 6 weeks ago and we came back to the U.S., 19 children came to the director and said they were all going through kind of a class that they have there and said, we all want to become believers. We want to get baptized. And so I wanted to share those children with you today. These are all kids that I spoke with, talked with, taught Bible study courses, mentored, worked with them daily, and you guys made that possible. So I wanted you to see it firsthand. This is my buddy Gong Chai. He'll be in the next picture. I did a lot of translation work for him. If any of you do Compassion Children or you send money to sponsor kids, write them letters because these mean more to them than just about anything in the entire world. I spent a lot of my afternoons translating sponsor letters that were written in English. I would translate them into Thai for the kids. And this girl who wrote to Gong Chai, one of his supporters, wrote to him, this story is about her becoming a Christian. And that was the point in his life where he said, tell me more. And this was a couple months later. Everything we do has repercussions, and everything you do in your life, everything we do here in the church, we see people's lives change, whether we feed people, we take in an orphan, we look after the homeless, we reach out to the people that we work with and that we live around. Everything we do is helping people just take one step more towards a relationship with Christ. And I greatly appreciate the chance that you gave me to be in Thailand and help 19 of these children and other 15 individuals. I didn't really have time for pictures. Help move them towards a relationship with Christ. And I really appreciate that and thank you for that. That's what I have. I do want to just say one thank you and two. Those of you who don't know, Christy and Luke and Addison and I are at this time transitioning back to the U.S. Full time. Your church, many of your individuals, and all of our churches and individuals are very, very faithful, very generous with their support. But we lost a lot of support while we were in Chiang Mai, really worked hard the last 6 months to make new relationships with churches and individuals. And things just, for whatever reason, didn't seem to be panning out. And so our organization counseled us and said, it just seems like the right time to come back to the U.S. I had two projects that I went there for, agricultural projects. One of them, we ended up selling all the land because of some new restrictions from the government. And the second one was my mentoring job and my agricultural job at Agape, which I was very happy to hand over to a Thai national that I trained for the last 6 months to take over my job. And so my job is filled, my shoes are filled, and those kinds of things. And so what Christy and I are doing now is we're visiting wonderful churches like yours, updating them about all of these wonderful things that you help support. And Christy already has a job, if you didn't know that, full-time. And I am looking for employment right now. Looking into a lot of different things. We're looking for housing, and so we'd appreciate your prayers as we look, as we try to find what's next in our life. But I can't stress enough how grateful we are. Every meal that we ate, every time we paid our rent, we remembered you guys. Every time we were able to give money to an agricultural project and plant trees, every time we took a kid out to lunch, we thought of you because you guys were giving, you were praying for all these opportunities to take place, and we greatly appreciate it. So I'm going to say a quick prayer, and then I know I've gone over time, but then we'll be done. Okay? So let's say prayer. Okay. God, this morning we give you thanks and praise. We remember and we see around us the great harvest before us and just how you continue to provide. This time of year reminds us that you continue to put every good thing before us. You have provided for us. You've given us everything that we need. And we hear these stories and we see these pictures, and it can seem like a place that's far away, either physically or sometimes in our own lives. And we see these stories and we think of our coworkers and our family members and our neighbors, and maybe we have doubts. But I just pray that we can continue to be faithful in our daily lives, that we seek your word, that we're in prayer, that we have compassion on those around us who are struggling, that we remind people that their sin has made them far from you, but that you have taken care of that sin if they would just accept your grace and your love. Would you help all of us to be agents of your grace as we go out into a broken world that needs to hear the message of grace and not condemnation? Help us to be people who are going out and serving our communities and loving them and letting them know that you are not as far off as you seem. Please continue to bless the ministries of Hudson Christian Church to affect the almost 2,000 people right here in Hudson and the surrounding areas and throughout this world as they continue to support missionaries and send people out to fulfill your great commission, to build communities, to strengthen believers, and to go out and reach the lost. We thank you so much for your grace. We pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.